Hey, good evening, everybody. It's the SCB Steelers Podcast presented by Deck Roofing Incorporated of South Florida. We're very glad to be part of the Variety Sports Network as well. And you last saw us, I think we had about a three-hour show on the first round night of the draft. And
we had a few drinks.
We had a few drinks, and we've recovered. And we're going to get you through our thoughts on the rest of the draft. We'll touch on Mr. Broderick Jones again as well, now that we've sobered up a little bit, at least for a few minutes. But anyway, it's good to be back. Good to see everybody. Mr. Scarpino is here and Ian is here. Ben, we understand, is having some technical difficulties, which means he probably spilled his tequila on his laptop or something. I'm not totally sure, but Scarp side, just real quick, does your appearance tonight, does that mean that Casey Kasem is here?
Oh yeah, I forgot. I did it like 10 minutes ago. So.
Oh, that's okay. Your on the fly ones are usually pretty good.
Oh yeah, he's here. Casey, okay. You know, Casey's like Jesus. He's always with you, you know.
Wow, what an analogy!
All right, so we've had a biblical reference in the first 2 minutes. I mean,
with that,
we just lost a follower.
Scarps, check
not
your
Jesus. Let me shut up. I'm not even drinking.
Yeah, your connections are goofy right now.
Oh, so my.
They're a little delayed, so just check that out. But anyway, welcome in to everybody that's watching the live show, and welcome everybody who takes the time to watch the show on your own time or to listen on your own time. Either way, we love it and glad to have you. Our audience continues to keep on growing, and hey, we know we're not for everybody, but we love the people that we're for. I can tell
somehow
you.
People stuck with us for that three-hour show on draft night.
I was
still with us at the end of the show.
I was stunned. There was still about a dozen people left after almost 3 hours. The draft had ended. We were in the bag, to say the least. And the fact that people were still with us and had been pretty much through the beginning to the end was truly remarkable. Yeah. And it says a hell of a lot more about you folks than it does about us. I can tell you that much. By the way, Ian, look what I picked up.
Oh, that is. Have you tried it yet?
I haven't. It's the maiden voyage right now.
Are you going to open it now?
Yes. For those listening, I picked up some Redemption Rye that Ian has been going on about, and
it is so smooth. The finish on it is incredible.
Have you seen the Redemption in a rum cask?
No, I haven't. I'll have to look for that.
I saw it. It was right next to this. I had my hand on it, and I thought, okay, I'm going to wait. I'm going to do the rye first, and then I'm going to come back to this because that looked spectacular.
Yeah.
But yes, maiden voyage for this for me tonight.
And all their stuff is pretty reasonably priced. So.
Oh, very reasonably priced. I think I got this for $26.
Wow. No, I think it was around 30 here, but yeah.
I
anything under 35 is usually pretty solid.
Bradshaw had a soccer tournament in suburban Chicago, so I swung through the fine state of Indiana and hit the fine establishments there. But anyway, so Ben will be joining us. Like I said, I don't really know what he's got going on right now. Some kind of technical difficulty. But again, welcome in to everybody.
Hi, Aaron.
Aaron's here. Chris is in. Burner's in. And again, if you're just hanging back, you don't want to get in the comment section. You don't have to, but we'd love to have you. And anyway, so just your overall thoughts, Ian, just on the the Steelers draft, considering they didn't have that fifth or sixth round pick. I mean, how are you feeling a week later?
I'm really happy with it. I mean, you know, obviously we'll see in a couple of years how the guys actually play on the field, but, you know, I felt like they did about as good as they could have with the picks that they had. You know, they were able to move down in the third round, get the fourth round pick back that they traded to move up and get Broderick Jones, essentially. I mean, it was basically a 13 pick swing, but they still got Darnell Washington in the third round, who was a guy that we were talking about as a potential late first round pick. And I thought like a lot of other people were, and it was kind of weird when he was dropping, because, you know, there were some reports floating out there that he might have a knee injury, and that isn't it so smooth?
I just tried
look on your face when you tried the whiskey was just like,
it's and I didn't mean, I didn't mean to interrupt you, because I knew I was eventually going to, but there's this little burn and you expect it to continue and it doesn't, and it's a really smooth finish.
So smooth.
Wow. Okay, well, not only do the Bradshaw people need to pay us, but now the Redemption people need to pay us. Anyway,
why I've been raving about this now.
It's delicious. It's really, really good.
Yeah. Okay. There was talk that Darnell Washington, you know, potentially had a medical issue with his knee, which was why he was falling in the draft. But then afterwards, he was like, I've never had a problem with my knee. I've never, like, sprained anything in it. So, you know, overall, I'm pretty happy with the draft as a whole. We got a really darn good player in the late third round in Washington. We got two good players in the second round. You know, I think, and I'll address the elephant in the room, because we kind of talked around on Joey Porter Jr. on the show. Overall, I'm really happy that we were able to get him where we did. I felt like 17 was always a bit rich for him, but 32, I was really happy with getting him there, because I didn't think he would be there. And really my issue with Joey Porter Jr. as a prospect was that I felt, you know, he was grabby and was prone to committing penalties. That said, he has some traits that you can't teach. You can teach out grabbiness with good coaching. You can't teach a guy to have long arms and be fast and be tall. Like, Joey Porter Jr. has those three things. So he has the raw traits. He's not going to come in and be an all-pro the first year. He's not going to come in and shut down Ja'Marr Chase the first year. But he has the tools to be coachable to, you know, succeed in this league and be a very good player for the Steelers. And not only that, we've talked a lot on this show about needing guys in that locker room that get it and get what it means to be a Steeler. And he's been in that locker room. He's been on the field when the confetti's been falling in a Super
Absolutely.
Bowl. I think, you know, we got some darn good players in this draft, but he's one of those guys who can get it of what it means to be a Pittsburgh Steeler. And, you know, for all intents and purposes, he's a great guy as far as his charity work and stuff in the community. I know he's been very involved with an autism and disability foundation. So, you know, it seems like we're getting a great human being along with a very good football player that has a lot of upside. We just got to kind of coach the grabbiness out of him. But really, the kid we picked in the seventh round, Trice from Purdue, had some of the same issues. He's tall, he's long, he's fast, but he's grabby. So, you know, if we can teach that out of those guys, we might land two decent cornerbacks in this draft.
Yeah. So what the plan is we'll I'm going to have Scarps give me his thoughts here, and then we'll kind of go through these pick by pick and just talk about some of the good, the bad, the pro to con, all that kind of stuff. But Scarps, you've had a week to kind of let this whole thing simmer. How you feeling about all this?
I mean, it looks good on paper. You know, we've talked, I've tweeted this, and we've talked in our group text about it, that, you know, you really truly can't evaluate a draft or a trade for a while. So, and I know it's hard to not formulate an opinion right away and die on that hill, but you got to just take a step back and look at what they drafted on paper. And paper's one thing. Mm-hmm. We talk about the potential, and potential is just another term for haven't achieved anything yet. And you know, I was on, you know, I've said on the show many times, I did like Joey Porter Jr. at 17, never said I didn't like him at 32. And I think that, you know, I found that whole scenario very interesting, because, you know, I think the Steelers truly had an opportunity to trade out of 32, mm-hmm. trade back. Mm-hmm. And the fact that they stayed put makes me believe that they had a hunch that Joey Porter Jr. was going to go within, I don't know, 5-6 picks, something like that. I think they truly believe that. And, you know, hindsight's 20/20. I'm sure they could have gotten, you know, a couple, you know, probably some more later picks for it, but I'm fine with it. You know, I would say, you know, we'll go pick by pick here, but it looks good on paper. It really does. I just, you know, you got to wait and see, man. And as much as, you know, I told you the guys this earlier, it's a blessing and a curse to have your dad be Joey Porter, because he is so ingrained in Steelers history, especially mm-hmm. those Super Bowl 40 run. Yeah. You know, they shot at me in Denver. I'm just saying that's just like so ingrained in Steelers history. And unfortunately, he's always going to be measured by, was he as successful as his dad? And that's not fair, but you know, the video between him and Joey, I thought that was really, really cool. And you know, you just never know what can happen with these picks. So let's just, you know, see what happens and then evaluate it in a couple seasons.
My thoughts are very similar to both of you. I didn't want Joey Porter at 17. It just didn't look right to me. And I wasn't overly thrilled when they took him at 32. And part of it was for some of the reasons that Ian laid out in terms of the grabbiness. He's kind of stiff at times. I didn't want that pressure that Ryan, you talked about, that, you know, he's got to live up to his dad. He's got to be good. And, you know, and then he kind of took Ike Taylor's number 24, and it's like, geez, you know, the kid's just piling the pressure on himself. But as the week has gone by, first of all, you can't argue with the position. They needed a corner, and you can't argue with that. And you know, so I went back and I was looking at some of the guys that were drafted right after Porter, you know, and Ian, you referred to the possibility of a trade down. I mean, you know, the Titans took Levis, the Lions took tight end Laporta out of Iowa, then the tight end Mayer went out of Notre Dame to the Raiders. Steve Avila was a guy I liked, but he probably, I mean, guard center, you know, and so you just keep going. I mean, Jonathan Mingo was a guy, he goes eighth in the second round. He's a guy I had us in the third round, mm-hmm. you know, and so when I go back and look at this, I think it ultimately was the right pick. And I just don't think there was anywhere else they could have gone there in that position. They're getting a first round talent at the top of the second round.
You hope.
Oh yeah. Yeah. And believe me, I was probably asked a dozen times in the last week, well, how'd you think the draft went? And I give a standard answer every damn time. Ask me in 2 or 3 years, and I'll tell you how I think the draft went. When I see these guys play, when I see who stays healthy, when I see what they can do as coaches and how these guys, you know, handle being professional football players, because everybody handles it differently. And everybody knows that. So yeah, I'm excited about the draft. I think they attacked it well. They got the spots they needed. And so therefore, you know, let's just tie into Broderick Jones for a minute. The Steelers essentially got Jones really for nothing, because as Ian pointed out, they eventually got the pick back, you know, with the trade down. I'll ask you this, Ian, does Jones start week one? Have you had a chance to rethink that at all?
I think he starts week one of the regular season. I don't think he starts week one of the preseason. I think Dan Moore starts week one of the preseason, but I think, you know, kind of like what we've seen with some other guys, as the preseason goes on, I think it's going to become pretty evident that it's Broderick Jones's position. I think Dan Moore will be served just fine as the sixth offensive lineman that could potentially come in a goal line set. He could, you know, whatever, be that extra tackle. He could be a swing tackle if someone gets hurt. Dan Moore is a fine player to have on your bench to be able to bring in as an extra tackle. But I think eventually, yeah, I think Broderick Jones starts week one.
There was a comment, I think Mark Cabali at The Athletic might have made this today. He said, you know, the thing with Porter is Porter's going to get a lot of drills. He's going to get a lot of action. He's going to get a lot of reps and stuff against receivers, both in the mini camp and then early on in training camp. But he made the point about Broderick Jones, though. He might not actually have aggressive contact with a player until training camp, you know, and I thought, you know, they'll still do some things at mini camp, but I see what his point is. Yeah. And so that's why, to what your point was, maybe he starts a little slow in the preseason, but I just don't know how he's not the guy by week one or two. Scarps are
and some of that, if I can just build on that too, to your point, you know, the first week of the preseason, usually the first string, either the veterans don't play or the first string plays very little. So, you know, I could see it as a situation where, yeah, Broderick Jones doesn't get a lot of full contact. So they're like, we're going to start Dan Moore. He's going to play, you know, maybe the first quarter, and then Broderick's going to come in and play the second and the third quarter, or play the whole second half just to get him more reps.
Yeah.
They may look at it that way of, you know, let's get this guy more reps with the backups, because in the first preseason game, the backups play more reps than the starters do. So
absolutely,
I wouldn't put too much weight in what happens in the preseason. I do think he starts week one.
Okay. Scarps.
Yeah. This piqued my interest the other day. I think it might have been yesterday. And since 2000, there have only been five Steelers rookie offensive linemen to start week one. And it's Kendra Green and Dan Moore in Buffalo in 2021.
Chooks by necessity somewhat.
Yes, yes. Yeah.
Right.
Chooks in Cleveland in 2018.
Yeah.
Pouncey at home against Atlanta in 2010. And then Marvell Smith in, I think, 2000 against the Bengal. I don't remember that one. Sorry, my mind's slipping me. But
and we'll forgive you on that one.
But, you know, Ian brings up a good point about and maybe as I get older and the Steelers get younger. Shit, when I worked there, like, nobody played that first preseason game because everybody there was old. Like, now you look at it, it's like, okay, on defense, Minka won't play, Cam won't play, TJ won't play, maybe Larry Ogunjobi won't play. Man, everybody else is young. Like, on offense, they probably won't, especially after what happened last year. I don't think they'll Naj won't play, but everybody else is so young. So, like, I mean, Dan Moore is only a couple years older than Broderick Jones. So, like, I really don't know, you know, what, and it's way too early to predict. But, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if Broderick Jones doesn't start right away. You know, we used to talk about on defense, like, if you were a rookie on defense, you definitely didn't start. You know, nobody ever started.
Oh, but
now,
no.
But now I also look at it as, you know, maybe, you know, even. And people were saying, like, well, it was an aggressive move by the Steelers to move up to get him. I don't think it was that aggressive. I think it was there. Like, I think it was a right choice. It's not like they moved they scorched earth and gave up everything to move up to get Paris Johnson. Like, he was right there. So, you know, yeah, I don't know.
Plus,
I don't think we
had some help from the hoodie too.
Oh yeah, what you talk about, like, ultimate dick move. That's hilarious. And then, like, they interviewed like one of their player personnel execs, and he wasn't even shy about it. Like he basically, like, without saying it, was like, yeah, we did that to do that. But, you know, we'll see. I wouldn't be surprised if Broderick Jones didn't start. But then again, too, I want to make this clear, even though the SEC is the best conference in college, people don't understand the difference between college and the pros at that level. Like TJ Watt and Max Crosby, I'm just naming some edges right now, mm-hmm. but TJ Watt and Max Crosby are about a billion times better than Joe Smith from Ole Miss coming at you from the edge. I'm just saying. So like, you know what, you know, some of the flaws that you can get away with in college, you can't get away with that in the NFL. Like they talked about Broderick Jones has quick feet. Okay. That's all fine and dandy, but does he have quick feet for the NFL or does he have quick feet for college? Like there's still an adjustment there. Like it's not as simple as just like, oh, he's just going to plug him in and it'll do it. But the good thing is they actually have depth on the line for once. Right. And you know, shit. I mean, thanks, Claude. Appreciate you. But yeah, like I just, you know, I wouldn't hate it if he didn't start. But I mean, I would also say Dan Moore should be on a short leash. Like if Jones is prepared.
You know, I know in the chat, Burner asked a question about, you know, is his weakness pass blocking? I don't think we know if he has a weakness yet because, you know, at Georgia, I mean, he didn't give up a sack this past year. I think he had one penalty and it was a false start.
I think, you know, so. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So he's pretty solid in all areas, but I'm not going to sit here and tell you that he doesn't have maybe a deficiency. But I just don't think we'll see that until, as is pointed out, he starts going up against top notch NFL pass rushers.
Well, and remember too, Jones was only a redshirt sophomore. Yeah. He's 22 years old. So, you know, there's going to be some growing pains because he's a young guy, but he's got all pro potential and really it's just 22 years old. I mean, he hasn't even grown into his frame yet. Like he still could, you look at him on tape. You're like, his hips look kind of slender. Like he does look awkward, doesn't he, to kind of grow into his frame still.
Former basketball player. When you look at him, he looks like a basketball player.
I saw that. There was like a video floating around. Like he shot like a 3-pointer, like his form. I like looked at him. I was like, oh, he got a good shooting for it. But then like I rewatched it. I looked at his body. I was like, damn, he looks awkward. Like,
he looked
like the great Khali from, you know, WWE back in the day. It was like really big up top. And then like his legs, he had, you know, but you know, I would also go back to, you know, we talked about Dan Moore and Kendrick Green starting out of necessity. Right. Yeah. And then I go back to like Pouncey. And I remember when we drafted, that was my first year. I remember we drafted him and I was like, this dude is fucking good, man. Like this guy's good. But like, just knowing how the Steelers operated, I was like, he's not going to start. I was like, Justin Hartwig, like they're not. And then like literally he outplayed Justin Hartwig. Like it was like those first real practices. I was like, oh, Jesus Christ. I was like, this dude's definitely going to start. And like, I think Broderick Jones is really going to have to perform at a high level and put a lot of coaches are going to have to trust him. And I don't necessarily think that's a bad thing if he doesn't do that right off the bat. He's a rookie. Mm-hmm. There's growing pains.
Yep.
And I think that, you know, there's always growing pains when you bump up to this level. There's no question.
The one thing I'll add to this conversation about him starting too is offensive line, maybe more so than any other position group on the field, relies so much on communication with the people next to you that even if it's suboptimal to start him, it may be worth it to start him just to build that communication between him and Seumalo. Like we saw this year, they had the same starting line for every game and how much that benefited them over time. Like we've seen in the past how much communication matters on the offensive line when you get guys who can't communicate with each other. And, you know, heck, Dan Moore and Kevin Dotson couldn't communicate a stunt to save their lives, and they started next to each other the whole year. But nevertheless, like, communication matters so much, and you only get that by just doing more reps next to the guy. And considering they signed Seumalo to a 3-year deal and drafted Broderick Jones, like, that's your future left side of the line. You may just want to get those guys out there and be like, build this rapport together. Let's do it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm excited about it. He, by the way, for those that didn't see, he's going to wear number 77. which if you look back in Steelers lore, and I think Scarps mentioned it, wasn't Marvell?
Marvell was 77, yep.
Marcus Gilbert, too.
Marcus Gilbert, of course.
Marcus Gilbert had a pretty good career here, too.
Yeah. Well,
third-round pick, he did. He had a very nice career.
Second?
Yeah,
second.
He was drafted the DeCastro year because they drafted the whole right side of the line that year.
That's right.
No, he was drafted in 11, the year after Pouncey. It was DeCastro, then Mike Adams.
Oh, you're right.
Okay. Oh, Mike Adams.
Adams. So I know we're getting into the picks. Are we going to JP Jr. now?
We are going to JPJ, baby.
So here's another thing about where they took Joey Porter Jr. at 32. And Big Ben's burner said this earlier, but it is a great value. And I agree. I think 17 would have been steep. 32 is solid. 77 Melvin, you're right. The kid that was killed.
Great point.
RIP. Yep. What you do in this league is almost as important as where you got drafted. You know, when you get drafted later and you perform, it's like, oh, he's an overachiever, right? Mm-hmm. When you get drafted high, your expectations are high. But then there's that sort of like middle ground. And Terrell Edmunds, prime example. If Terrell Edmunds was taken in the second round, I think people would have had a lot different opinion on him. And I still think I still think as a first rounder, he was available. He was active. I wish him well. But somebody with Joey Porter Jr. not going in the first round, I think there's a little bit less pressure on him than there would have been. Because if he went at 17, we're talking like huge pressure. Then it's much more than your dad was PZ and you took Ike Taylor's number. But
right.
I'll tell you this, and people might not like this, but if Joey Porter Jr. has a career like Ike Taylor, that is a massive W. And I know people, and this is why I said you gotta wait and see, because I don't know if Joey Porter Jr. is ever going to be as aggressive, right? They don't play the same position. Like mm-hmm. Joey Porter Jr. is not going to be, maybe he has a celebration, but like, he's not going to be bringing the heat off the edge and sacking people. He's not gonna be doing the wee ride thing. Like, let him. Yeah, I agree. If Ike had hands, he'd be in
the Hall of Fame.
Yeah. But I think people were already putting these expectations on this kid about and I've already seen he's going to be a ball hawk. He's going to be this and that. And I'm just,
he does think, not have great hands. He had one reception and it's just his like college just, career. Just, he dropped like, a bunch of them.
Just yeah. like Christ, just let the kid get settled and let him do what he got to do. And you know what? Like I said this all the time, go back and look. People gave Ike Taylor shit all the time, but week in and week out, he lined up with the opponent's number one wideout, and he was one of the only people in this league that ever kept AJ Green in check. Yeah. And I'm mm-hmm. telling, and it didn't matter. And you know what? And he had a great coordinator in LeBeau, and he had great coaching, but Ike never shied away from a challenge. Every damn week, that dude went up against your number one, and more often than not, he locked him up.
Yeah, Ocho, too. He shot that guy down all the time.
Ian, let me make a point real quick, then I'll let you comment on Porter. It's something that Ryan said that has just driven me absolutely insane all Uh-oh. Week. Well, it's this rush to anoint these young men, the next great that. We should be in the Super Bowl in 2 years. Stop it. Just stop it. Let these guys get coached. Let them get in a locker room with professional athletes. Give them a chance here. I look, I'm just as excited about this draft and this season coming up as anybody else. I think we have every possibility of taking a next step and getting to the postseason this coming season. But my God, let these guys get fitted for their freaking helmets first. And then let's go from there. But anyway, Ian, no, you, I, you're,
I think you're right on that point, because I've said for a long time, for the folks who have followed me on Twitter, that, you know, I feel like draft capital is kind of a myth, that, you know, the week before the draft, people freak out like, oh, this team's got 14 picks, or the Browns have 13 picks this year because they were dog shit. They went 1-31 and they have so many draft picks. Look at this massive. Well,
we sound like Browns fans.
Yeah. But, and I've said for a long time, not that draft capital is a myth, but draft capital is only as good as the people you have making the picks and the coaches you have to develop them. If you don't have good scouts and a good GM and a good coach making the picks, you're going to pick crap players. If you don't have good coaches to develop them, you could pick good players, but then you wind up like the Jacksonville Jaguars and never develop them into anything.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, yes, I'm happy where we are now. We picked players that I think are good and have potential. Now it's on the coaches to mold them and help them reach that potential. So, I mean, for a week after the draft, this is the happiest I've been about a whole draft in a long time. But, you know, I think your point stands that we shouldn't anoint these guys yet, that we got to let them grow, let them work. And, you know, the other thing too is, let's not forget, like, some of these are young dudes. Like, Jones is 22, JPJ is 22. Like, they're going to be, you know, there's going to be some growing pains over time. They're not going to come in and Ike Taylor didn't come in and start his first year. Joey Porter Sr. didn't come in and start his first year. Like, you know, guys get better over time, and you just want to see that continued progress over time.
Yeah. You done in the Dick LeBeau days, rookies just didn't come in and start.
Yeah.
It just, that's the way it worked. Different era, different time now, but,
To credit where it's due, too, even though Ben decided not to join us tonight, or his computer decided that he wouldn't join us.
Yeah,
tonight.
Something's good. Yeah.
One or the other. But Ben had been saying for a while on the show that they were going to draft, he thought they were going to draft two cornerbacks. And he was happy enough with the Patrick Peterson signing that if Peterson could be a mentor to whatever two cornerbacks we drafted, you know, that could probably work out pretty well. And lo and behold, we draft Joey Porter Jr. at the top of the second round and Corey Trice in the seventh round. Guys who are physically kind of similar to Peterson. Mm-hmm. You know, they got long arms. They're tall. They're fast. You know, Peterson, neither of them are Patrick Peterson. Patrick Peterson now is a better player than both those guys are right now. But that being said, if they can learn some things from him, you know, and even going back to some of the interviews JPJ did before the draft, he was on that podcast with Patrick Peterson, was like, man, if I get picked by the Steelers, like, I'm going to be in your ear all the time trying to just learn everything you can teach me. And I was like, wow, that was a really good answer for a 22-year-old kid. I think, you know, we got a kid who wants to learn, a kid that's got a chip on his shoulder and, you know, has the athleticism to be able to turn that potential into something. So let's just hope that he can.
Yeah. And I mean, I think, as we were talking about kind of in the opening, I think his ability to start week one is going to be right there. I expect him to be playing. I think what's curious about that is, what do you do with Levi Wallace? They're obviously going to use him. Don't get me wrong. There's a number of specialty packages in which you would use him. He does have a little bit of slot nickel corner experience, if you will. But I don't know if that's where they want to use him. So I'm curious to see how kind of that develops as training camp goes on. Later in the second round, the Steelers selected a guy that was definitely on our radar because he was on the Steelers' radar. They were looking at Keanu Benton, the defensive tackle out of Wisconsin. So it did not come as any surprise to anybody who paid attention to this draft prep. Have you had a chance, Ian, to take a look at him?
Yeah, I went back and watched some of his Senior Bowl stuff. And I mean, he was the most dominant guy the entire week of the Senior Bowl, through practices, into the games. And, you know, it's funny, though, because what he did at the Senior Bowl was like the best of his college tape all in one week together. That his college tape at Wisconsin was a little inconsistent at times, but then at the Senior Bowl, it was like something clicked in his head and he was like, this is a job interview. I needed to be the best possible dude I can be every single snap, every single rep in practice. And he really kind of took his game to the next level mm-hmm. that week. And he showed flashes of it at Wisconsin, but like his stats weren't overwhelming at Wisconsin. But I mean, he was almost unblockable at the Senior Bowl. Like he was like eating up double teams and like getting through guys, and looked like a guy who could not only kind of, you know, two gap from the nose tackle spot, but also like be a little bit of a pass rushing force. But like his entire 4-year college career, he had 9 sacks and 19 tackles for loss. Granted, 10 of them came his senior year, but still, you know, another young guy. He'll be 22 when the season starts. He's 21 right now. Mm-hmm. So has still some time to kind of grow into his frame. You know, good size, 6'3" 310, but still a little growing to do, you know.
Yeah.
Long enough arms, but the burst that he showed off the line at the Senior Bowl was like the best reps from his college tape all into one. And you know, I thought Tomlin's comments this week about Benton were very interesting. You know, someone asked him in Benton's press conference, he said, you know, Coach T told me at the Senior Bowl, he had his eye on me. They liked what I was doing. And he told me that, you know, they needed some more goons. And then somebody asked Tomlin about it. Tomlin was like, yeah, I said that. I'm not going to back down from it. But, you know, I got to have a talk with this kid about not making our private conversations public.
Right.
And then Tomlin was on somebody else's podcast today. I think it was like with Willie Colon.
Willie Colon was on it. Yeah.
And they asked him about that again. And Tom was like, well, you know, really what I want is a guy who plays like Willie Colon with like controlled aggression. And I'm listening to this thinking like Willie Colon's so many fucking penalties. Like a
fucking flag machine.
Yeah. I know. I was like,
controlled, but I understand what he's saying.
I don't want I that level Willie, of aggression.
Man, he got a lot of rags,
but after the way we've got our ass kicked in the trenches the last couple years, I want a guy with some attitude up front, and I'm perfectly totally fine with Tomlin saying we need some guys with some physicality and some attitude up front. So I'm fine with it. Didn't raise any red flags for me. I was very happy with it.
Scarps, do you think that he is probably starts primarily as a nose, then maybe works his way into some specialty packages, or what do you think?
I mean, I don't know. First of all, Big Ben's burner was saying Peterson is being a mentor. Like, you know, Benton's coming into a room with Cam Hayward, which is great. Larry Ogunjobi's been in this league a long time.
Yep.
Fehoko, so I look at Fehoko and Benton as the two guys plugging up the middle. But you know, we'll see. You know, you are Ian. I by no means am I a tape expert or anything like that. But I did see his Senior Bowl highlights, and I just remember thinking like, damn, this dude, like, he's like O-linemen couldn't even get their hands on him. Like it was really, you know, it was really like it was clear. Like this dude was having himself a week. You know, I don't care. Tomlin, I've heard him say this to so many rookies and even, you know, veteran free agents. Like, I don't care where you went drafted. I don't care how you got here. You're here now. Like, and I think that that's important because this team is definitely young, but the one thing that they should know is that Steelers football is stopping the run first and foremost, which sets you up for pressure on the edge. And I don't care what the dude's name is, where he went to school, as long as he just comes here and does his job. And you know, talking about the O-line earlier, hopefully getting back to sort of like that ground, you know, ground and pound. That defensive line for a couple years now, they haven't been able to stop the run when it matters most. And that has to be very annoying to them and very annoying to the Rooneys and anyone else in the organization that's been there a long time, because that is definitely not Steelers football.
The one thing I'll say about his Wisconsin tape versus his Senior Bowl tape, it he looked like a guy at times that was bored. He would have just this string of plays, he would dominate, and then all of a sudden the motor kind of slowed down. And obviously that's something you just can't do with that position in the NFL, because if you do, you get blown back 6 yards and then you're over on the bench standing next to coach. But so maybe that's what the switch flips, and he starts to turn that motor on every play. But the talent is amazing. Super quick off the ball, like you guys said, has the ability to get through double teams, and which is just huge. Keeping our linebackers clean is really job number one a lot of times for those interior guys.
I think the one other interesting thing, and we'll probably talk about this a bit more later, but when Tomlin was asked about Nick Herbig, he said one of the things, you know, we have a lot of respect for Jim Leonard and the scheme he's run at Wisconsin, which for Tomlin to say that about a former Ravens player is something. Nevertheless, Tomlin's other point was that Wisconsin runs a very similar defensive scheme to what the Steelers do.
Yeah.
So when they scout guys from Wisconsin, it's easier for them to kind of be like, okay, how are they going to fit in our system? Because you're seeing them, it's an apples to apples comparison by position almost. Whereas some other guys that play in different schemes, you kind of have to project how well they'll be able to adapt to
great
what
point.
The Steelers do. So I think with Benton playing the nose tackle spot in Wisconsin's defense, you know, you can kind of project that a little bit into our 3-4. But I think he's got a little bit of that Javon Hargrave to him. Hargrave was a little lighter. Hargrave was faster off the ball than he was. Mm-hmm. But I think, you know, it took Hargrave some time. It took him 2 years to figure out how to play in the nickel package, because he was pretty much just an interior guy. But once he figured out how to play in the nickel package and play, you know, as one of the two down linemen, then he was really good at getting a push and getting after the passer. And I think it might take Benton some time, but he's got that burst off the ball that I'm like, man, if you could use him rotationally in that nickel package, like, you can get him on the field for a lot more than like 10 to 15 snaps a game.
Yeah. The defensive line, I guess I'll call it competition or battle, is going to be epic this year. There are so many guys in there right now. And
yeah, I mean, you've got Montrevious Adams, you've got Armon Watts, you got Fehoko, you got DeMarvin Leal, if he stays at defensive end.
Right.
Given how the depth chart is right now, I got to think they're thinking of Leal as an outside linebacker, because they just have so many guys on the defensive line right now. Isaiah Loudermilk too.
Yep.
That, and not a lot of depth at outside linebacker. So I almost think they have to think of Leal as an outside linebacker. The depth chart just makes no sense.
Yeah, we'll have to really kind of examine that. I mean, Leal, I guess he could be kind of that anchor type edge guy. You know, you use him on you know, strong sides of the field type thing. But I'm with you. I'm just not really sure where it's all going to shake out. Darnell Washington, Ben was saying for months his dream was to draft Darnell and turn him into a tackle. And who knows, maybe that's what the Steelers are going to do. But as of right now, their plan is to keep him at tight end. As you mentioned, a guy that was thought of as a late first, early second round guy, athletic, big, great motor, you know, probably was underutilized a bit at Georgia because you had the other tight end, Bowers. That kid's amazing. And so he probably didn't see the ball as much as maybe he could have. So I know I'm excited about him and what they can do. They ran a lot of that 12 personnel last year with Zach Gentry. So I see no reason not to run it with Darnell. So Scarps, what'd you think of that pick?
You know, I also thought that was another pick with great value. Omar said it this week. He said that they were surprised that he was still there when he was there. And, you know, I think that, you know, sometimes it just falls the way you want it to fall. No reason to apologize for forgetting the guy that you liked. You know, I said earlier that I hate when, and I'm not putting potential on him. I said that earlier. I don't like when people already like crown someone or put potential on him, but I'm going to say a name. And if he has the type of career that this player would have, I would be thrilled. This guy reminds me of Jermaine Gresham. Gresham was a little bit shorter.
Yeah.
Gresham was 6'5", 260. And Washington 6'7", 270. So he's a little bit bigger, but he just reminds me of him. He got long, long strides, athletic as hell. And, you know, I know it's fun to, you know, to yell Muth when he catches the ball. Like, if they have any sort of creativity, this dude can take a top off a defense. Like, he is legit. Again, I'm not crowning him. I'm not putting expectations on him. But he has that it factor, and I really hope they know how to use him. And no disrespect to Connor Hayward, who was actually a bright spot last year. Maybe they made Connor Hayward the true fullback. But and no disrespect to your Michigan guy, Zach Gentry, but like Darnell Washington is definitely the most athletic tight end in that room. And I hope that they know how to use him, and he puts it all together.
And, you know, and real quick to answer the question by Burner, you know, Gentry's on a 1-year deal. So it's not like getting rid of him would be difficult. You know, the Steelers like having that extra tight end around, and I, you know, they can just classify Hayward maybe as an H or even a fullback, as was mentioned. And, I they like Gentry. They appreciate the hard work he's put in. He's the player he's turned himself into, and I don't think they're gonna just be real quick to get rid of him. But let's be honest, he's nothing compared to what Washington can bring to the table. So could he be gone? Absolutely. Yeah. Ian, what are you looking forward to here with Mount Washington?
Yeah, so Darnell Washington is taller, has bigger hands, has a bigger wingspan, and is, I'll say, more explosive, bigger vertical, broad jump, all that stuff, than Broderick Jones, who we took in the first round. So now, granted, they play a different position.
Yeah.
You know, Washington is 40 pounds lighter, so that makes a little bit of difference on the speed and the vertical, but like taller, bigger hands, bigger wingspan. Like, that's incredible. That's ridiculous. Like, this dude is huge and has a gigantic catch radius. And yeah, if they figure out how to use him correctly, yeah, he can just be an absolute monster, especially in the red zone, where you can line him up wherever you want him in the red zone. I mean, they could line him up at fullback, and some of the blocks he threw on pull blocks and you know, like getting out in space in front of guys, like he blocks like a fullback coming around the end of the line to be a lead blocker, mm-hmm. and just like blows dudes up. Like, you could put him at fullback and then throw him the ball. You could put him at tight end. You could split him out. Like, what he can do in the red zone for you is incredible, and all over the field. But you're right, he just didn't see a lot of targets, and he may wind up being the kind of guy that has a better pro career than he did college career, just because of who all else was on the field at Georgia that he played with. And
so it's pretty good talent there.
Yeah. And I'm really excited for this dude. He's another guy that, I mean, the way he blocks with attitude. And, you know, we talked about with Keanu Benton and the, you know, in the defensive line having some grittiness and toughness, the offensive line kind of needs that too. And for, I think, sure, both Broderick Jones and Darnell Washington bring that, you know, they're not going to get blown off the ball with those guys on the field. They're going to be the ones initiating the, you know, initiating the contact.
Yeah. Ryan,
I'm going to tell you this right now. How many years have we heard Art in the postseason press conference be like, "Hey, we got to run the ball better"? If they don't run the ball better this year, heads should roll, man. There is absolutely no excuse. And I understand that, and Casey will touch on this later, who the offensive coordinator still is, but like, come on, like every once in a while, you got to get a little bit lucky and draw something up that fucking works, you know? Like, I mean,
hey, they drew up that reverse handoff
and around Hayward.
The one other thing I'll say, and something that Mark, you brought up quite a bit last year, and I've kind of mentioned it too, was my discomfort with Zach Gentry was that if Freiermuth got hurt, I didn't know if Gentry could be a number one for a period of time.
So this is a good point.
Darnell Washington can definitely be your number one tight end. And Freiermuth's a guy who's had some concussion issues, hasn't really had any other injury issues, but concussion issues, especially when they compound themselves, are worrisome. So considering there's those questions with Freiermuth and his availability sometimes, I love the fact that we have a guy who can still be your complete number one receiving and blocking threat. Or if they want to go heavy, you know, you if Gentry somehow makes the team, then you put both Gentry and Washington into block at the same time or whatever. Like, you can limit the times Freiermuth needs to block too, which will also help kind of preserve him. And look who finally decides to.
Well, he's trying. He's trying.
He's got the dreaded spinning circle
of death here. Ben's trying to get in. You know, to Aaron was asking about, you know, did Moose concussion issue play a factor in that? I don't know how it can't. You know, he's had the issues, and I think, Ian, your point about the fact that if he is out for a game or two, Washington does become a number one, whereas Gentry, nice guy, but you're not a number one, man.
Listen, he's the last person to catch a pass from Ben Roethlisberger, so show some respect.
Yeah, Mr. Ben Anderson joins us. He does not look any too thrilled right now.
He looks frozen.
In fact, he looks frozen right now. He's really frozen, man.
He is.
Must be having one of those frozen cocktails tonight.
He's like Ted Williams frozen.
He is the head of Ted.
He's actually like Casey Kasem frozen. Wasn't Casey frozen? I think Casey was frozen.
Because they couldn't decide who he was going to be buried by.
Wasn't his head missing, or like his family wouldn't give up his head?
Here's a
guy that doesn't have his head on straight.
Anyway, hopefully Ben will get in other than just a frozen picture here. You know, the Steelers ended up getting that fourth round pick back, and they took Nick Herbig, and I think this is probably where we're gonna start. I don't want to say disagreeing, but just maybe having a little consternation about the picks here. Scarves, what was your feeling at this selection?
I understand, you know, Tomlin talked about the value of drafting brothers and whatnot. And there was a video of TJ Watt, you know, showing him some moves and whatnot. But I'm going to tell you this right now. I don't have a lot of hope for the younger brother Herbig. Yeah. We forgot about him on the offensive line. We haven't mentioned him.
Oh, yeah.
Another depth piece, but his arms are very short. I don't see him having huge production. Doesn't mean he can't be a good special teamer. Mm-hmm. I could picture, you know, a guy like him sort of replacing a Derek Watt on teams, you know, sort of like little Tasmanian devil on team. Derek Watt was a good special teamer. You say he can ball, and I'm not saying you're wrong, but like, what do you mean? What do you mean he can ball? Like, what do you like? He had a couple catches last year. Like,
dribble. He's got a good spin move.
I don't know. Whatever. We'll see. I said it earlier. We'll wait and see. But I don't have high hopes for the younger brothers Herbig.
Yeah, I for me, it's a completely open door. I just don't know what to expect, Ian.
Yeah, and the thing I was looking at too with that pick in the fourth round was, you know, by the time we actually made the pick at 132, which was the real tail end of the fourth round.
Yeah.
Pretty much all the guys that we had kind of scouted were off the board, and there wasn't a whole lot left, and I was kind of like, there was a couple guys I was like, maybe they'll take this guy, maybe they'll take that guy. Mm-hmm. There wasn't anyone I loved at that point. And like, when was the last time a Steelers fourth round pick like amounted to a whole lot, you know? So
Ike Taylor,
Ike Taylor, right. Willie Gay was fifth round,
round, you're right.
Willie Colon, I think, was a fourth rounder. But still, like, I don't know, fourth round's kind of a toss up to me. My philosophy on the draft is always like, first round, you want to get a guy who can start this year. Second and third, you're trying to get guys who are future starters, probably not start this year, but are future starters. Mm-hmm. Fourth, fifth round, you're getting guys who are going to play on special teams immediately. And like, maybe you can develop into something as a depth piece, or, you know, if you find a diamond in the rough. And then sixth and seventh round, you're basically just drafting guys like that you want maybe to be on the practice squad, but just wanting to make sure you get them instead of having to go through the undrafted free agent process. So like, that's kind of my philosophy on the draft. So by the time you get to the fourth round, especially at pick 132, like most of the big name players were gone. I didn't have a huge issue with it. They needed an outside linebacker.
They had to have depth.
This guy's kind of a tweener that it was, you know, kind of, he's a little light for an outside linebacker. Right. He's not real big, so can he put on some weight? But like, probably doesn't need to put on that much. I mean, he was at 240, so maybe put on like 8 pounds or something to get close to 250. But it's fine. I don't know. I don't love it. I don't hate it, but it's a fourth round pick. So like, I don't know. You know, if there was a fourth round pick that like, this guy's such a steal, I'd be like, well, there's probably a reason he went in the fourth round too.
Yeah, I wasn't. At first I thought, okay, are they going to maybe make him an inside backer? That was my first kind of thought. And then when they, Denzel Martin basically said, yeah, we're going to start him on the outside. You know, I mean, I like his motor. Don't get me wrong. There's something to be said for that. But at the same time, you're right. You got to have some weight. The lack of length in his arms is a concern. You know, and he was able to get away with some things at the Big Ten level, which he's not going to get away with in the NFL. So I don't know. I was thinking when they got towards that pick, I was thinking that's where they doubled up on the corner. Or maybe that was where they went with the receiver, but, you know, they went with, the linebacker there, you know?
Yeah. Of the guys left on the board, they had had Darius Rush from South Carolina in for a visit. And wide receiver Charlie Jones from Purdue, who they had in for a visit, went to the Bengals, the pick
right above them.
You know, maybe they were looking at him. You know, there was a couple quarterbacks still on the board that they had scouted, like Tune from Houston. Then they wound up getting the guy from Minnesota as an undrafted free agent because they need a third one. They probably need a fourth one too, just for training camp. Izzy Abanikinda from Pitt. You know, he was like the only running back they even looked at in the draft process. They weren't even really looking at running backs at all. But by that point in the fourth round, I don't know, this was a weird draft too. We talked about this a little bit on Slack that like there were guys who went in the third round that we were like, those are fifth round guys. And then there were guys who, you know, went in like the second round who we thought were like fifth or sixth round guys. And
it's like
Stetson Bennett went in the fourth round.
It's like the whole, like everybody that was a undrafted free agent, seventh, sixth round. It's like they all just got on an elevator and went up like two or three floors.
Yeah.
You know, I couldn't believe how high some of these guys were going. And I, you know, obviously we could have had them evaluated a little bit incorrectly, but that means everybody did because everybody was saying the same thing. So no fifth, no sixth round pick. The Steelers took cornerback Corey Trice out of Purdue. And again, very comparable to Porter, good size, good speed, little grabby. His thing, most people had him as a third round talent, but he's got an injury history that's kept him off the field at times. I really think if he stays healthy, he's going to be a player. Mm-hmm. I just got a feeling this kid. I and that's all I'll say. I'm not going to make any predictions. If he can stay healthy, I think he's going to be around for a little while. Scarps?
Yeah, I mean, he's long. He's raw. He could be coached. You know, and I was looking back on this. Like, the Steelers have actually had some success in the seventh round. Over the years, Kelvin Beachum was a seventh round pick. He's still in the league. And then a year later, they drafted Nick Williams out of Samford, and he's still in the league. That blows my mind. But then it took some time, but Tyler Matakevich was a seventh round pick. He's a special teams demon in Buffalo.
Yep.
Then you got Carlos Davis, who's still, I believe, in the league, or at least bumping around. Then he got Trey Norwood, yeah. Presley Harvin III, Mark Robinson last year. So, you know, who knows? We'll see what happens. Right, you never know. And I know I've said this the whole time, but you you could be an injury away from making a roster, or an injury away from getting an opportunity to make a roster.
No doubt about it.
And, you know, I don't know, you know, what their plans are for him, but, you know, a guy like Akella Witherspoon, who, you know, had a really nice end of the 2021 season,
mm-hmm.
and got another deal. He's probably not going to be on this roster. So then it just sort of becomes like, who can you be better than, and what can you do better than others? Can you play on teams? You know, we talk about it all the time, that a lot of times these decisions come down to that third preseason game. And are you playing on teams? Aaron Gilbert, Thaddeus Gibson, he was a fourth rounder. Doug Worthington was the seventh rounder. Come on, get it right. Fuck, dude. No, I'm just teasing. But I don't know. But I mean, you might be right. They've had success over the years. You still got a guy, you know, Kelvin Beachum, Nick Williams are still playing in this league, and they were drafted almost 10 years ago.
Yeah. Yeah. I think when you throw in the fact that they're still relatively thin at corner, I mean, when I look at Pierre and Witherspoon, I don't exactly get inspired. So, you know, we'll see what the kid can do. What are your thoughts, Ian?
Yeah, and I think the other thing about Trice too that they liked is he played a little bit of safety in college too, so he could play both corner and safety if needed. You know, so we'll see. Somewhat impressively, he had 12 passes defended last year and only one pass interference penalty. And had some really good athletic testing numbers. 6'3", 206, ran 4.47 in the 40, 6.7 in the three cone drill, which is insanely good. Pretty good numbers, but like Ryan said, he's raw, a little grabby, but he's got those, like with JPJ, he's got those things you can't teach. He's got height, he's got speed, he's got long arms. You can't teach those things. You can teach technique. Can he learn technique? That's a different story, but you can teach technique. You know, he's got the intangibles. Now he's just got to get the technique down.
Damn, man. But Ben, I like Ben the got lo-fi.
There ain't no high or Wi-Fi there. It's lo-fi.
No-fi.
Really, the only head scratcher to me, I mean, you could make the argument about Herbig, but taking Spencer Anderson with their final pick in the seventh round. Guard with some center experience, actually some tackle experience too, and we know how the Steelers love versatility on the offensive line. I'm not going to sit here and pretend I'm a Spencer Anderson expert by any stretch of the imagination. I watched a little bit of him. You know, nice player, but I think he's probably destined for the practice squad. Ian, what do you think?
Yeah, I saw that pick and I was like, who's that guy? Yeah. not really on my radar at all, but we know that they were scouting guys that had, you know, guard, center, sort of swing lineman type potential. And at that point in the draft, I mean, that was pick number, 251? I mean, they were within the last 10 picks of the draft there. So, those kind of picks usually don't hit on much, but hey, you never know. Bring him in, let him compete. They've really stacked up the line, and I think broadly speaking, it kind of speaks to the philosophy that Omar Khan, Andy Weidel, Mike Tomlin, the I'll call it the new front office, even though Tomlin's the same.
I know what you mean, yeah.
The new front office has adopted of really trying to build this team from the inside out, right? That we signed.
Yep.
Three offensive linemen in free agency. We drafted two more, plus a tight end who's a damn good blocker. We signed two defensive linemen in free agency, drafted another one, signed three inside linebackers in free agency. Really have tried to address some positions of need where we made a trade for a number three wide receiver that cost us nothing in draft capital. Basically, we just moved down like 10 picks. And then signed, another nickel corner in Sullivan during the draft. Signed another safety in Keanu Neal, who's kind of a box safety, and drafted two corners. So not only have they kind of tried to build this team from the inside out, they've also really addressed their positions of need. That it was like, we were a bad pass defense last year, so we're going to, you know, sign three defensive backs and draft two more. I mean, maybe they're good. Maybe they wind up being good players. Maybe they're not, but you can't fault the front office for at least addressing the need, right? They have at least signed guys at the positions where they needed to. We'll see if they're good, but they at least tried to address the holes that they saw.
Just, you know, but before we get to Casey and wrap things up, you know, you mentioned the Sullivan guy they signed from Minnesota. I think it's very, very easy to just say, you know, who's this guy? Minnesota's pass defense was terrible. Yeah, well, let's not forget, sometimes it's the coaching, it's the system. You know, maybe he comes over here, he gets a little rebirth and plays pretty well. He's predominantly a slot guy. So we'll see. You know, jury's out, so to speak. And then, the other guy you mentioned earlier was Tanner Morgan, the quarterback from Minnesota, signing as an undrafted free agent. You know, tons of experience. You know, played under a couple of different coaches, PJ Fleck, and some two or three different offensive coordinators. So pretty seasoned kid, played through injury. I mean, I think he's perfect as a third QB option, but I also agree they'll bring in somebody else too, for sure. Ryan, is Casey Kasem
ready? He's here. He's around. Yep.
Well, like Jesus, he's always around. Say
he's always with you. I haven't done this voice in a while. Casey's coast to coast, American top 40. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the week that was May 4th, 1988. Ryan from Pittsburgh Ranch, dear Casey. Omar Khan is the GOAT. On God, there has never been a general manager quite like him, and there will never be. Kevin Colbert, who? He absolutely fleeced the Bears by giving up Chase Claypool and in turn drafted Joey Porter Jr. No general manager in the history of sports has ever made such a forward-thinking move. Let it be known that his first draft, 2023, is already better than the Steelers' 1974 draft, which included four Hall of Famers. Are we sure Omar isn't a time traveler and actually called the shots for the Steelers back in 74? Casey, I, of course, am being sarcastic. I am. But Steelers Twitter is not. They told me over the past week that Omar is in fact the greatest general manager of all time. Recency bias is a hell of a drug. How soon we forget the incredible run for former Steelers general manager Kevin Colbert had from 2004 to 2021. No losing seasons, multiple Super Bowl and AFC North championships, drafted Hall of Famers, brought in Pro Bowlers and All Pros via free agency. But to hell with that guy. Hang on. Let me tweet Omar with a goat emoji so I can get a bunch of likes and retweets from people with an avatar of George Pickens wearing a ski mask while looking at the television of him being drafted last year. In all seriousness, Casey, the Steelers 2023 draft on paper looks quite good. I've always been a wait-and-see kind of person, so I'll withhold my judgment for a few years. Again, don't tell Steelers Twitter that. That wouldn't be bussin', no cap. I hate myself. Casey, on draft night, I was hoping the Steelers could find a team to take Matt Canada. I heard rumors that the Pittsburgh Maulers were interested, but the Steelers simply couldn't take a 100th round pick in return. Canada's draft value is actually negative. You couldn't even give him away at this point. As long as Canada is running the show, it's going to be nothing but shattered dreams. Ryan, you connect the dots better than anyone that's ever written me a letter. Moving up seven spots this week to number 8, here's Johnny Hates Jazz off their album Turn Back the Clock with Shattered Dream.
Wow. Well done.
Well done indeed. Not bad for 10 minutes before showtime.
The lack of sleep from fatherhood has not slowed you down.
No. Cruising right along, man. Real quick on George's question about the young man that they signed out of the XFL. Hey,
Butler?
Yeah.
He's a body.
right now he's a body.
Big dude. He's a big target. Yep. He was a first-round pick in the NFL draft, wasn't he, and didn't work out?
Uh, Was he? God, was he a first?
What?
I mean, I'm thinking of somebody else. Am I thinking of somebody else?
I know he was very highly touted coming out, and I don't know why it didn't work, but you know, he's put up some
numbers. He was a fourth rounder. Never mind. Okay. He came out of Iowa State, I remember. Yeah.
He's 6'5", 225. He's a big dude.
Yeah, he's a big dude.
There were a lot of people that year said he was underdraft, like he fell for some, like people thought he should have been drafted a lot higher. If you go back to like pre-draft rankings from 2019,
I think it doesn't hurt anything to have him in. Sometimes you catch lightning in a bottle. A guy that's maybe felt like he's been dissed a little bit in the NFL. Now he's getting another chance, and who knows? You know, as was said earlier, guys with chips on their shoulders can sometimes be pretty damn good. Anyway, so that's the latest from us on the draft. We'll start looking ahead probably to some roster stuff as they've got what is it, Ian, about 86, 87 guys under contract right now?
Yeah, they've got rookie mini camp coming up next week, so that I think they'll probably invite some guys and maybe sign a couple off of that. And then, you know, I think they said kind of by the time, you know, they hit the real mini camps in June, they want to have the full 90 man roster. Right. The other thing, though, I got to say, next Thursday, I believe, is the NFL schedule reveal.
Yes.
So we will be on the show the schedule comes out.
We'll be talking that instead of rosters. So, that's right. The schedule release, always a big day for fans.
Could the Steelers host a home opener?
For the
first time since 2014.
I tweeted about this a while ago because the Buccos are actually on the road that weekend, so they could host a home opener this year.
I think it's going to happen. It's been too damn long. It's going to be a home opener.
Cincinnati.
I always do my schedule prediction post.
I always do a mock schedule. I get one right every year. It's pathetic.
Well, exactly. If I get one, I'm thrilled. We'll have that to talk about too. But anyway, thanks everybody for jumping on the show. Thanks to all of our listeners and our viewers, regardless of whether you're on live or you watch later. Make sure you check out the site, steelcityblitz.com, and follow us on Twitter at SCBlitz, the podcast at SCB_podcast. You've seen our handles on there all night, but anyway, thanks so much for being with us, guys. We really appreciate it, and we will see you next Thursday. This has been the SCB Steelers podcast presented by Deck Roofing Incorporated of South Florida. And hey, go Steelers.
Hey, the Ravens suck. Fuck those guys.